Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The old world is dying. The new world struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters. Welcome to the Time of Monsters podcast, sponsored by The Nation magazine and widely available wherever you listen to podcasts. For this week, I want to talk about a more entertaining figure, perhaps not quite a monster, but maybe an entertaining little golem or imp of the perverse, which is George Santos, the newly minted congressman from New York State, who has become quite the figure because of his sort of epic history of lying, which, you know, one can compare either to Baron Munchausen or, on a less literary level, George Constanza on Seinfeld. He seems to have lied about everything. And we'll go into all the lies that he's told, but a lot of lies about his family history, his education, his road to wealth or supposed wealth, and even lies about his college athletic career and the injuries he received therefrom. But as entertaining as the Santos story is, I've been disappointed by most coverage of it, because it tends to treat him as a kind of entertaining freak and this sideshow to politics. And I actually think that Santos speaks to something larger in the political system that goes beyond, you know, this one kind of con man. And I was very grateful that Moira Dunigan, the columnist for The Guardian magazine, who writes on American affairs for The Guardian, wrote an excellent column, characteristically good, about Santos, which tries to link him with broader problems in the Republican Party, but beyond the Republican Party, in the sort of political system at large, and maybe even in the dream life of America. Moira has been a guest on before, and I hope we'll continue to be, because she's a wonderful, spirited conversationalist. So I just want to, maybe we can just start with the lies. Like, what are some of the lies of George Santos?
Oh my God, what aren't the lies? Gee, thank you so much for having me, for one thing. I'm thrilled to be here. This is a blast. But George Santos is a really interesting figure. He just won a congressional seat in New York's 3rd District, which is a sort of middle, upper middle class, suburban district in the suburbs of New York out on Long Island. And it turns out that basically none of what he ran on as his standard biography is true. And these are like very basic things, like where he went to school, where he worked, what he has done for a living, what his pastimes are, who he has been married to, all of these different quite foundational aspects of his biography have turned out to be not merely, as he has admitted to, like embellished, but outright fabricated. So he said that he went to Horace Mann, a kind of Tony preparatory boys school in New York City. He didn't. He said that he went to Baruch College, a very like well-regarded public college in New York City. He didn't go there. He said he got an MBA from NYU. He didn't get that either. pardon me. He said that he worked as a sort of financial advisor and trader at these big blue chip financial firms like Citigroup and Goldman Sachs. And those people have no record of him ever having worked there. He said that he ran a pet charity called Friends of Pets United for 10 years. It does not seem to have existed. And then, you know, there are other things that don't add up either. This is a man who has claimed to be the descendant of Holocaust refugees who fled Ukraine to Brazil. That does not seem to be the case. He's claimed to be Jewish in his campaign out in, it should be mentioned, a heavily Jewish district. And then he's later tried to backtrack, saying, no, I only meant that I was Jewish. He claimed that his mother died on 9/11. She didn't. He claimed that four members or four employees at a company he started in Florida were killed at the Pulse nightclub. There was no company, there were no employees. This guy has painted himself a very vivid biography, and he has lied about all of it. And some of the lies seem kind of personally pathological or just plain weird. Like, he claimed that he was a volleyball champion in college at Baruch College, won some kind of championship and had to have a knee replaced. He didn't go to Baruch College. Baruch College does not have a men's volleyball team. He has seems to have both of his original knees. But that's not really a self-serving lie. It's just kind of a weird one. It's like, why? But then he has also claimed, this kind of rags to riches, upward mobility narrative. And he has claimed ethnic and identity allegiances that he doesn't seem to have. And some of these lies are pointless, and some are incredibly savvy. So it's interesting to place Santos somewhat at the intersection of like personal pathology and mental illness, but also speculatively, but as has been done by some members of the Republican Party. But he also seems to typify, and maybe even like in some kind of perverse way, perfect some of the dishonesty that has come to govern a lot of American politics, particularly in the Republican Party.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and I think the lies. I mean, I think the one line that you forgot is he seemed to have some sort of like brain cancer or brain damage that was treated. So, and I think that we can easily put under the pathological personal lie to make oneself more interesting. Which happens out in life. But I think that what's more interesting, I think your piece really brings this out, are the lies that exist to serve a purpose and to serve a narrative. And there's in ways in which the lies he told were like lies that people want to believe. And they want to believe in the American dream, which some of us might say, especially in the 21st century, is a lie. But the idea that you can go from being a working class immigrant from Brazil, or a child of working class immigrants from Brazil, and go to the top of Goldman Sachs and Congress. I mean, people want to believe these narratives, and they want, and there's a desire to have some of the roles that he filled, to have someone who is a conservative Republican, but is Jewish and gay and Latino and a working class background. I mean, one can see the sort of appeal that that could have to, like, as you mentioned, the sort of well-to-do formerly Democratic voters of Long Island.
I think what you have to look at when you're examining this sort of fictional biography that George Santos created for himself is like, how does it work as a piece of fiction, right? And as a piece of fiction, it works very much and in this Horatio Alger mold, or like a kind of schlocky like Steven Spielberg film. It seems like he is present at every moment, or something from his biography is present at every moment that has like sort of challenged the American self-conception and conscience, right? Like, he links himself to the Holocaust, he links himself to 9/11, he links himself to the Pulse nightclub shooting, and he is sort of he also seems to have fabricated at one point a vandalism and attacks on his personal home, supposedly committed by left-wing protesters, in an incident that he said happened shortly after the 2020 summer with the George Floyd uprising. And he sort of has this Forrest Gump tendency to always be there. And so he's kind of working to create this persona where he embodies America itself. And in some ways, you could say from a quite cynical perspective that he does, right? Because he has propelled himself seemingly to a position of quite a bit of prominence through this dishonesty. And there's something almost, I don't think you, I think it was you, Jeet, who said on Twitter that he's almost taking on the persona of a folk hero, even as other Republicans from his caucus in New York at least disavow him and call on him to resign. National Republican leadership has been much more hands-off because they need his vote in the House. But he has perversely, in his dishonesty, almost a kind of honesty because his lies are not concealed by pretext or pretensions to virtue or technicality. He's just kind of shamelessly lying in this way that's almost kind of refreshing. I don't want to say, like, I do not admire George Santos, but there is something kind of perfect about the distillation of all of these, dysfunctional elements of American politics that he's come to represent. You know, he is putting on a story that's very, very appealing while himself being very, very corrupt. And doesn't that say all that there is to say?
Yeah, no, there is something about him just as a character that I think is, leaving aside the political analysis, but I think is worth emphasizing. Yeah, and I did sort of say he's become a sort of folk hero just because, they're the classic American archetypes in film, the cowboy, the gangster, but there's also the con man, the characters in The Sting, or, George Costanza in Seinfeld, the someone who's the kind of shameless liar and gets away with it. And like on a moral level, when our super ego is working, of course we tut tut that and say that's very wrong, that's very bad. But there's always a part of us in the audience as we're watching one of these stories that kind of admires that because the con just the gangster shows the corruption of the system. The Godfather is a great critique of the American system, and the con man has the same function. The con man it seems admirable because he's someone who shows just how fraudulent everything is, and there's always a part of our soul, I think, especially if we're not like goody two shoes and not respectable people, that kind of like knows the system is a bit of a fraud, and to see someone like shamelessly getting away with it is kind of admirable. I mean, to as you mentioned Spielberg, and I'll say after the Fablemans, this is a pro Spielberg podcast, but after Spielberg in caught this very well in the movie he did with Leonardo DiCaprio, Catch Me If You Can, which is about a con man who can pretend to be a pilot or pretend to be a doctor and get away with it. I mean, it's in some ways it's the reverse of the common phenomena of imposter syndrome. Someone who doesn't have imposter, someone who's just a successful imposter, like that. If you suffer from imposter syndrome, there's something like admirable about like say, hey, like someone can be an imposter and get away with it. So I do think that there's a kind of emotional level where this story is very entertaining and almost joyous to people. I think it's wrong to deny ourselves the level of entertainment that we're getting. Like we have to be honest about this, right? But having said that, like obviously, like when thinks about like lying about 9/11 or the Holocaust or the Pulse thing, that's morally reprehensible, no question. And more to the point, the political projects on which he's lying on behalf of this kind of American dream and this kind of meritocracy where virtue can rise, leaving aside our entertainment of it, it does seem I think it's more worthwhile to question that system. And I think the further point that you made, and I want to bring out here is, like there are a lot of other people that lie and get away with it and aren't made the sort of scapegoats and the sort of held up to public ridicule in the way that Santos is. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd love to, 'cause something that's kind of weird about George Santos is that he's not really lying more than this sort of Republican political media machine is doing. He's just kind of telling different lies or more personal lies, right? So, there was a large propaganda machine around the 2020 election that fabricated, based on, as little ties to reality as Santos has his biography, these claims of voter fraud, right? We're going to manipulate this security video of these, this mother and daughter who are working as poll workers in Atlanta and say that they're passing a thumb drive full of false votes when it was in fact a candy, and those are elaborate lies. They are full fabrications, the way that George Santos's biography was. They were put forward with, the same kind of shameless confidence, and they led to actual violence. And that lie has not, or does not seem to be garnering consequences, and it's not garnering a degree of pathologization of the individuals who perpetuated it, the way that George Santos's lies are. There are abundant lies about abortion, some written into our law, some that are required to be read to women seeking abortions in several states, that are utter fabrications. And the people pushing those lies are not pathologized the way that George Santos is. And then, there's a kind of more standard distortions of biography and achievement that you see basically in every single politician's career. like Tammy Duckworth beat out a Republican senator from Illinois who had fabricated, I forget this bozo's name, but he had fabricated some military accomplishments. And these are awards he said he won that he just didn't. And it was able to be looked up and it didn't matter. On a, I think, like, not morally equivalent scale, but like further on towards the honest end of the deceiving spectrum, like John Fetterman has really presented himself as a like working class guy when in reality he's like a little more privileged than his like appearance might indicate, and had early material support from his parents, et cetera, et cetera. And like a friend of mine ran for local office and said, really, emphasized that his parents had run a pizza parlor when he was growing up. And that was true for a few years, and then they became biochemists. But, he leaned into the pizza parlor, and this is kind of a
Everyone's
genre
born in a
of
log cabin.
Yeah, exactly. It's a genre of biographical dishonesty that has become standard in the political campaign. Because it's about asserting a belief in this story of upward mobility, story of, possibilities of prosperity, story of hard work, and dedication in the United States context, leading to honesty being rewarded with power. And it's just like it has to be buttressed by dishonesty because it's not true. It's not how anybody's life works. And hasn't been for, really for the vast majority of American people for the vast majority of our history. It's that we are committed to this fiction that incentivizes this kind of dishonesty. And in the Republican Party in particular, self-serving dishonesty, outright fabrications, like not merely distortions, but actual fabrications, have become a pretty standard amount of punk party functionality. It's just that they are coordinated and accepted. And, Santos's big trespass in that sense is kind of just.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That he went off script.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting paradox. As you say, everyone tries to claim that Horatio Alger is myth, and they're kind of lying about it because they usually come from a more privileged place than they did. And whereas Santos actually did live the story. I mean, he came from a much more working class background than like the typical member of Congress. But he lived the story by lying about it, which turns out to be worse than not living the story and lying about it. So which is a kind of interesting paradox. And it is the desire not to question, and I think it's a bipartisan thing, the desire not to question that myth, that becomes and to maintain the Horatio Alger story. I mean, that is the real lie, but that is what cannot be questioned. And so in some ways, I mean, again, I don't want to say any brief for George Santos, who deserves everything that's coming to him, but there's a way in which he's a scapegoat for something that's much larger than him.
I almost wonder if part of the reason George Santos has been singled out is not just, the extreme nature of his fabrications, which I do think are different in degree, if not especially different in kind, right? But it might be, as you pointed out, Jeet, sort of the direction with which he is pointing his dishonesty, because there's something about being born to privilege that is seen as granting you an entitlement to power, and there's something about the direction of lying, where you lie to say that you were more disadvantaged than you were, that seems to be given greater permission. Whereas this guy, George Santos, actually lived, a quite, as we were talking about earlier before we started recording, a quite like mundane working class immigrant life of striving. He lived in Queens with his mother, who was a housekeeper. He worked for a long time in a call center doing customer service. He was evicted a couple times. They couldn't always make rent. This is a story that does sound like the opening chapter of a Horatio Alger novel, but that's not what he said he was doing. During the time he was actually working in a call center, he said that he was working for Citigroup. And it's the maybe aspiration to prestige instead of the aspiration to working class authenticity that is actually the taboo that he has crossed.
Yeah, no. I mean, if one looks at it that way, it is really perverse. There's another the aspect of the story which is still a mystery. I think we're getting some hints of it now, coming out with some new reporting, which is like, how did he do this? Where did the money come from? How did he actually go from being an actual, legitimate working class guy to a guy who had like a lot of money behind him? There seems to have been like some sort of moment where he found some patrons who gave it to them. So some of the recent reporting kind of hints at like a Russian oligarch, and there might be others as well. But I mean, I think there's different aspects to this, but one is, if he did, I mean, if, as it seems likely, he found some wealthy patrons who, decide to support him in this, how did he get them? And I think that you might it might be worth pointing out like why a figure like him is so appealing to, some Republican donors. Like what was his sales pitch that, was turned out to be successful?
Yeah, so I think it's worth noting that this is not the first time George Santos ran for Congress. He ran in 2020, and his financial disclosure forms at that time say that he had been making about $50,000 that year. And then when he ran again in 2022, he donated $700,000 to his own campaign, right? So something happened in those 2 years that changed his circumstances pretty dramatically. He lost in 2020. I believe he lost in the primary to and the seat wound up going to a Democrat named Tom Szózsi. But that part of Long Island has been changing quite a bit. It is going for Trump. It is getting redder. It has always been pretty white and pretty middle class, but what that has meant electorally is changing quite a bit. And I think it's also worth thinking a little bit about politics in the state of New York, which is a very blue state anchored by a very, very big blue city that has a like pretty terminally corrupt and incompetent Democratic Party that completely botched the congressional redistricting, tried to keep this shoulder slapping governor in office even as he was sexually harassing seemingly everybody around him, and getting help covering that up from well-connected members of New York's NGO scene. They don't the New York City Democratic Party does not see themselves as having to work very hard. They see themselves as in a sort of very lucrative, rewarding position where they can look out for themselves and their friends. So they botched this redistricting, and then they really, really botched this congressional cycle in 2022. So districts that were winnable were lost because the New York City Democrats were not doing their due diligence. And one of those races where they didn't was in New York 3, because this was, the New York Times got kind of a lot of flack for not reporting on Santos's lies and exposing them to this big wide audience until after the election. But in fact, local newspapers were. This was actually covered before the election by local news. It wasn't picked up. The New York State Democrats didn't exploit it. They let the seat go. But that doesn't excuse or sort of erase what is happening into the district, which is it is a group of mostly, upper and upper middle class white voters who are in the suburbs who are trending right. They've been trending towards Trump. They've been trending more conservative. And that doesn't mean that they are the white grievance voters. It doesn't mean this is a whole bunch of people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, but it does mean that it's people who want to vote Republican, and because they used to be Democrats not very long ago, they frequently want to do so in a way that like helps them preserve their identity as tolerant cosmopolitans, right? So I think one of the things that may have encouraged these, kind of mysterious as of now funding sources for Santos and his congressional campaign is that he checks a lot of identity boxes, or at least he claimed to, right? The version of events that Santos put forward about himself was that he was a gay Jewish Latino man. He was a millennial. He's very young. He's 34. He's a millennial. He is this kind of Republican that does not appear, at least from the outset, to be a white grievance candidate, and in particular, he fits identity categories that have been the subject of like a lot of fear mongering in Republican politics. He is a Latino, and Latinos and an immigrant Latino or the son of immigrants, and that has been, a very rewarding source of fear mongering for the Republican Party about Latino immigration and its supposed threat to the American character, the sort of like racist imagination that they've encouraged. Santos claims to be Jewish, and the Republican Party is now still gripped by sort of more in the 2020 cycle, QAnon, in the 2022 cycle that has receded somewhat, but there is still a sort of strain of anti-Semitic conspiracizing in the Republican Party. And also he's and the space lasers and and also Santos is gay and there has been a or he appears to be gay and there has been a real flowering of homophobic sentiment around particularly school boards in local politics around this groomer panic that has become quite violent and what he gave these voters in his district who want to think of themselves as tolerant perhaps even socially liberal or at least not racist characters, is he gave them a ton of plausible deniability. And I think that would have been a really appealing package for these donors, whoever they may be.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that there is like, I mean, As a candidate, I think he seemed almost too good to be true, and he was too good to be true. That this is like a dream candidate if you're running as a Republican in a kind of blue trending red district that you can have someone. And one saw it in people who are, if not quite Republican, I do want to try to promote the idea that the Republicans are different. I am thinking of Glenn Greenwald, who tweeted out this tweet that I think, as the kids like to say these days, it has not aged well. He tweeted out on November 15th, "Meet George Santos, the first ever Brazilian American and first ever openly gay Republican elected to Congress in U.S. history, the son of working class immigrant parents who left Brazil for U.S." You can see in that tweet, I think, the idea that, like, oh, it's great news that this guy is a different sort of Republican, for people who want different sort of Republicans. People want a permission structure to be more open to the Republican Party. I don't think we should necessarily touch at the issue of is he really gay, like, I think at this point, but except that I think there's a market precisely. I mean, it's an ironic thing, and it's worth pointing out that precisely because the Republican Party has gone parts of it have gone so hard on anti-gay stuff, on anti-trans stuff, that there's a need to have a kind of balance of, the good gays. And then Tucker Carlson on his show, like, if he wants to go after trans people, he will get people who are putatively gay. I don't know exactly what their identity is, but they claim to be gay, and they say we're gays against groomers, because it's understood that if you want to wage this sort of identity war, you shouldn't, if you want to attack, civil rights, it's best to have a black face there. If you want to attack feminism, it's best to get an anti-feminist woman. And if you want to attack gay rights, it's best to get someone who claims to be gay. And I think, as is pointed out, that it would have been, if he hadn't been so discredited by events, I think George Santos would be on Tucker Carlson every week as the sort of, hey, Tucker, I'm gay. And I think these trans people and these groomers are going too far. I mean, like, it seems like he's almost engineered for that position. And I think he had actually been involved, although weirdly enough, under a different name. But there's a video showing him in like 2019 claiming to be Anthony something or other, and organizing gays for Trump. I don't think one can be too cynical. Like, it seems like it's like an almost perfectly engineered candidate for playing that sort of, identity game of, having providing plausible deniability, easing people's conscience, and providing, the voice that you need to attack minority groups. Do you agree?
I mean, yes. There's even a clip from Santos on his most recent campaign where he says something to the effect of, and I'm not going to get his phrasing exactly, but he says something, as a proud gay man, I think it's ridiculous that they're teaching gender ideology in our schools, and it's a classic right-wing weaponization of identity politics to sort of pretend that a member of the targeted group cannot be complicit in the bigotry or targeting of that group, and therefore, if you make that person your messenger, they can be a very effective weapon. And really, like, using the identity as a moral shield, it's sort of a classic right-wing tool for opposing like sort of social inclusion or equity efforts, particularly towards, very classically towards women and black people, and now sort of the same model gets replicated towards, whichever whichever minority population needs to be targeted. That's a long, we could be here all day, but there's a long history of gay people sort of positioning themselves as one of the good ones, and of and you know and it's got it's a position with its own rewards, also, as I think George Soros, seems to, I'm sorry, not George Soros, oh my God, I sound like Tucker Carlson, George Santos seems to have discovered, for himself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the perhaps the place to, like, sort of close this out though is we mentioned that there's a kind of a financial issues that are likely to be investigated. And I think if Santos gets in trouble, it's going to be through campaign financing laws because that's where like there seems to be a lot of skullduggery. And I think the novelist Joseph O'Neill tweeted out something that was very interesting, just basically the point that he feels like, this is a case of the system punching down, that Santos is an easy target, and that same system seems reluctant to go after, Donald Trump, a major figure of Trump Org, which did a lot of shady tax stuff, and it has all sorts of other financial improprieties, including seeming money laundering with Saudi Arabia, putting a lot of money into Trump resorts, and it seems very striking that the same system that is letting Trump, and not just Trump, many other politicians like get away with it is going to go after our friend George Santos.
Yeah, there's often like a sacrificial lamb quality when these prosecutions actually happen. I'm thinking like I wrote a lot about Me Too, and there was a sense that like, okay, well, Harvey Weinstein was especially egregious and he's not really making people money anymore. So like this is the guy that we can give up to like calm the outrage. Almost like a sacrificial lamb, we'll give you this guy and shut up. Whereas, George Santos is not the only person allegedly, suspiciously, running his political campaign as a money laundering operation. He's not the most powerful. And, once he is no longer as needed as he appears to be by Kevin McCarthy right now, I think he will be a disposable embarrassment. And something that they're willing to get rid of. But right now, Kevin McCarthy needs that vote. They are not apologizing. Elise Stefanik, a very prominent rising star in the Republican Party, went in really hard for Santos, and she is not apologizing, not issuing any kind of mea culpa. They are going to approach their support for him with the exact same shamelessness that he approached his own fabrications. And if he gets in trouble, I think, O'Neill might have a point. It might be a bit of a drop in the bucket or some low-hanging fruit, to mix my metaphors, because he is merely one egregious and obvious example of a much deeper rot of corruption.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point to end this discussion with. I mean, I think I'm going to link to Mara's column. I think that the point that she makes was really people need to take away with it is like it's okay to laugh at Santos. This is a very funny, entertaining story, but he is emblematic of so much more in American politics and the American, not just the American economy, the American social system. George Santos, c'est moi. The look in the mirror, America, and you'll see George Santos. So I want to thank Mara once again for being here. Great conversation.
Thanks, G. This was really fun.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.